and land use management fees. This bill is a section 73, so we have invited the provinces to come and to listen to the bill, because after the briefing, the permanent delegates must go down to the provinces and brief the provinces about the bill. So that's why we are here today. I think before we start the meeting, we must introduce ourselves. I was starting by myself to say that I am Norithando Qikani, the chairperson of the Land and Environmental Affairs here in the SOP. I'm from the Eastern Cape. I will start from you, Honorable Wimpf.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My name is Gauta Mokgoro. I'm a member of this Land and Environmental Affairs and Rural Development Committee, and I am from the Northern Cape. I'm also a whip of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Whip. I think all the members, all the honorable members, even from the provinces, must first introduce themselves. So I'll go to you, Honorable Whip, and all the members from the province.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. Thank you very much. My name is Daryl Worth. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm from the Free State Province. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Noctulas Kakane. I'm the Chairperson of the Gauteng Provincial Legislature, Agriculture and Rural Development Committee.
Thank you. I think now I must go to my staff with me.
Morning, Leslie Pillay, Content Advisor.
Asger Bauer, Committee Secretary.
All the parliamentary staff. Yeah.
Good morning, Kubis Juster, Researcher for the Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs.
Good morning, I'm Matilda Letago, Executive Secretary to the Chairperson.
Okay. I think, is there any PMG?
That is correct. Morning, my name is Bahle Mathe.
We can hear you.
My name is Bahle Mathe, I'm from PMG.
Okay, is there any assistant secretary from Parliament? I must hand over to the officer from the department. PG, the interior.
Honorable Chair, my name is Ngidinzi Shabane. I'm the DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Nozizo Makalimele. I come from the same department. I'm a DDG responsible for special planning and land use management.
Morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm Sande Ogorombi. I work for Rural Development and Land Reform Department.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Theo Achilles. I'm from the State Law Advisor's Office. Thank you.
I'm Mike Walters. I'm chairman of the Western Cape Standing Committee on Environmental Affairs and Agriculture. Okay. This is our coordinator of the Standing Committee, Ms. Wasima Hassan Musa.
Morning, Honorable Members. Rajesh Makan from Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Members. I am Saral Hassan from the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature.
Good morning, Honourable Member. I'm Stemlo Mkile from the Northern Cape Police Affairs.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Hedy Schneider. I'm here from Anglo-American. From Anglo-American.
Okay. Morning, Honourable Chair. I'm Hank Smith, Legal Resources Centre.
Good morning, Honourable Chair members. My name is Annelies Crossy. I'm from Agri SA.
Morning, Chair. Makhamula Kahudi from the First Provincial Legal Station's Liaison Office. Yes, the Liaison Office.
I'm Irene Singh, the acting CFO for Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Hi, I'm Megumi Tsutsui with Legal Resources Center.
Morning, Chair. Members, my name is Elton Grieve from Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning. My name is Thulaganyo Solukela, and I'm from SAGA.
Good morning, Mamunyan Mukwena from Rural Development and Land Reform.
Good morning, my name is Tepiso Dinswane from Rural Development.
Good morning, my name is Susa Makabene from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm the Legal Advisor to the Free State Legislature.
The member of this committee, I welcome you from Western Cape. I think we all introduce ourselves. We are going to start to do our briefing by the department. We must listen carefully about this bill because, as I said before, this bill is Section 76, and also we need to check. Or we need to, in fact, this bill needs to have the public hearings from the provinces. So we must listen carefully, and we are going to go down to our provinces to do the briefings. I think I must hand over to the department to start briefing us about this bill. Thank you, DDG. Or DG, or outline.
Honorable Chair, thank you for this opportunity to present the Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill to the committee. This bill has been a long time coming and has had to overcome quite a number of challenges along the way, as a result of which we are seriously running behind time. In terms of the timelines that we were given by the Constitutional Court to come up with a bill by next month. But we will present to the Honourable Members the content of the bill, and I'm going to invite my colleagues Dr. Makhalemele and Mr. Sake Sunday Okunrombi to present to the members the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and DG. I just want to give a sketchy background of the bill and the intentions of the bill. We want to start off by saying that the word apartheid itself just meant separate development, and that it was the policy of the previous government. And if we recall the Group Areas Act, for example, of 1950, which became then the cornerstone of this apartheid ideology, sought to divide the country along racial lines. And this policy of separate development was driven with such aggression, passion, and determination that it became, in inverted commas, a success. it has left a mark on the South African space economy that is now difficult to reverse. The results are the distorted and dysfunctional settlement patterns that are characterized by uneven land settlement patterns, characterized by uneven land allocation, service levels, racial segregation, extreme poverty and dependency. And the poor, in terms of the apartheid planning of the time, were located on the periphery with limited access to land and other areas of economic activity, whilst the rich were settled on strategically located land next to areas of work, good facilities, and other areas of entertainment. This then created a heavy burden, financial burden, on government in terms of transport subsidies and other costs to transport the poor who were located in the periphery of the country or of the cities and towns. So the net effect was that the post-1994 democratic government inherited an inefficient and ineffective special settlement pattern and an undesirable socio-economic legacy. So the aim of this bill is to address these historical, spatial, and socio-economic imbalances in development through improved access to and use of land. It aims at promoting social inclusion, spatial equity, desirable settlement patterns, rural revitalization, urban regeneration, and sustainable development. And if we are to succeed with this bill, so once enacted, it must be implemented with the same aggression, passion, and determination as did the apartheid architects. So I want to hand over now to my colleague to give the detailed presentation of the bill itself.
Okay. Before, let me welcome the honorable members from KZN. So they must introduce themselves before we start. We have not yet started. We have just had the outline, but we have not yet started the gist of the bill. Can you allow you to introduce yourself? Yeah.
Oh, I'm Nandora, the first boy, the chairperson of COCTA from KZN. We're going to be joined by Honorable Bibi, but she could not walk the upstairs, so she's coming.
I'm Inkosi MZN Madlala, member of COCTA. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. The Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill that's before the NCOP has a long history, as Dr. Makaremele and the DG have said. Perhaps we should just give a context to what has informed the development of this piece of legislation, and perhaps to separate the bill from other things we do as a department in our Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of an outline of the presentation, and we will be guided by yourselves in terms of time so that we do not exceed time allocated to us. But we propose to give a context, a definition of what the subject matter of special planning and land use management is. We would want to remind honorable members at the House about the challenges and the problems that the bill seeks to address. I will take the House through a bit of a process of our search for solutions, the quest for solutions that the department has engaged with post-1994, and we will give an overview of the Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill. We will not pretend as if the bill is perfect. We will share with honorable members some of the remaining challenges that has engaged us in the years past that we've been on this bill, like Digi stated. We want to share the drafting process and the consultation, the very extensive consultation we've had on this bill, leading us so far, Chairperson. Chairperson,
I think it may be known that the previous versions of this bill used to be called the Land Use Management Bill. The version that we presented in 2008 to the then Parliament was the Land Use Management Bill. Right now, we're calling it the Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill for certain reasons. Special planning that we want to suggest that it involves some thinking, the exercise of planning around space. It's not just ordinary thinking, some critical thinking about how we use our spaces and places as spaces for actions and interventions that should take place on those spaces and places. It goes beyond traditional land use planning to the extent that it brings together a set of multi-criteria analysis, a multivariate analysis of different factors that affect the use of land, so different policies of different departments, private sector, as they place, as they do express themselves in space, is what we concern ourselves with in spatial planning. We also want to suggest within the framework of governance that implementation of spatial objectives are such that national government has got a role to play, largely a coordinating role. Provinces also do have significant roles to play in spatial planning, but at the end of the day, it gives expression at a local level. So there is a lot of discretion that should exist at local level to guide development that takes place at that level. What is required of us is to attempt to achieve a high level of degree of consistency in these different policy objectives, whether at national, province, or municipal level. We will concede, Chairperson and honorable members, that in designing a governance framework for spatial planning and land use management, it will remain managing a set of complex relationships between these policies so that we can achieve certain broad policy outcomes. Land use management on its own is a slightly lower level activity that talks about different resources, variety of purposes. We know about agricultural land use, we know about land use for human settlement, we know about land use for mining, we know about land use for transportation and different uses. We're saying that how do all these possible land uses interact in an integrated manner? So that if we say we want to do low-cost housing here, or we want to use a piece of land for mining or agriculture, how do you integrate all these things in a system that is coherent? And that's largely what we mean by land use management. So we are talking about this integration as a set of activities that is primarily going to reside at municipal level. The ultimate thing is how do we coordinate all the sectoral planning and sectoral activities and give expression to them at a particular level. Of course, we will look at in the final analysis, and when we take decisions around land uses, we must look at the environmental, the social, and economic factors. How do we talk about productivity or the best possible land uses that gives us the greatest possible sustainable benefits? That's as per definition. Chairperson, our point of departure is that pre-1994, there were different laws in the country, depending on which area one finds himself or herself, that regulates the subject matter of planning. Like Dr. Makalemele, my colleague, has said, in reality, the pre-1994 planning system was such that it was deliberately designed to entrench a particular spatial pattern. The pattern was one which was defined according to race, where one lived up to a point in this country was largely determined by the color of your skin. It was one that assisted the government of pre-1994 to achieve segregation, to differentiate, and to enforce privileging. These multiple laws will then tell you, if we look at the oath of laws that we got in 1994, which are still largely with us, that depending on which part of the country you find yourself, there are different institutions, different programs for developing land. You are very weak, probably extremely weak, land use management system in your self-governing territories or your former homeland. In your former four provincial administrations, you have your ordinances, which are still, if we present a map to you specially, you will see that probably about 13 different legal regimes in a minimum in a province like Northwest. You will see the Cape Ordinance applying in parts of Northwest till today. You will see some form of the Transvaal Ordinance apply. But there are different legal regimes. In Mpumalanga, you will find that your former Kwangwane or Kwandebele, there are different laws applying. This is what we got in 1994. I think we will all agree that this will only produce a disjointed and incoherent system. The first attempt post-1994 to remedy this unsatisfactory state was the enactment in 1995 by the post-1994 government of the Development Facilitation Act. The Development Facilitation Act was very well intentioned. It was designed to assist in reconstruction development. It was developed to assist in breaking all the different systems put in place by all these different pieces of legislation. The DFA started in 1995. I think the first implementation of the DFA was in Kaohsiung around 1997. In 1997, there was a Development and Planning Commission that was set up to advise government on how to better implement legislation in this respect. There was a green paper that was finally produced in 1999. The cabinet approved the white paper in 2001. But what is important, Chairperson, is that from the beginning, DFA was ever intended to be an interim piece of legislation. It was not meant to be a final piece of legislation. It was expressly enacted in 1995, and the Development and Planning Commission was set up. The green paper was developed. The white paper was developed with a view to saying that we need a proper piece of legislation as opposed to the interim legislation that we got. In terms of its manifestation, and I think I'll try to rush through this, the pre-1994 system was one where you had very long approval processes, there were slow phases of development approvals. We know developers in some provinces will complain that it probably will take 18 months to get a development approval, depending on the type of application you want. And if we say we want an environment that is promotive of economic development, you cannot have land development decisions taking place in such a very long period of time. I think the most negative effect of the planning laws that we had, that we got in 1994, was the fact that the ordinances, the laws applicable in your former homeland, certainly did not express a single unifying vision that will transform the space post-1994. In fact, the ordinances did not give us a basis to envision a different kind of reorganized special settlement. Different provinces did different things. It was purely legal and procedural in nature. It did not talk about linkages between different sectors. How do you mediate? Agriculture was regulated in terms of this legislation. Human settlement was regulated in terms of other legislation. There was no multi-sectoral kind of analysis or multi-sectoral kind of integration. And we all know that a single land can be good for different purposes, but the pre-1994 piece of legislation did not deal with those kind of integration of different users. In the urban areas, we all know that different World Bank reports keep telling us that your urban centers, your Johannesburg, City of Cape Town, are areas of engines of growth. We know today that we compare your best performing municipalities and all those stuff. I will talk to municipalities. But what we're not saying is that some of our urban spaces have become sites of exclusion. People come to the city, are they really urban citizens? Are they welcome in the city? I don't want to use words, but people migrate within the country, and you see that there are two types of citizenry in the country because of how we plan the use of our space. Exclusion is largely based on planning, to the extent that you cannot find accommodation within certain things. There are questions of how do you capture value. The economic implication of land use becomes the critical basis for land uses, or probably the only basis for land use is a decision. And we know that the subject of restructuring our settlement patterns goes beyond just economic value. We continue to deal with the question of formality and informality. Then we deal with evictions on one hand, because some people are not welcome in certain spaces. The way we define exclusion, because we do not cater for the poor sufficiently well. we do not really have growth management strategies. How do you manage development in our urban spaces? I've already spoken to the question of our irregular land uses because of how we define our land use management system. Ultimately, I think it's about the power relation that you express in planning. Because if you define that you can only use this land for this particular purpose, somebody will fall outside that bracket. It's either illegal or irregular, then you talk about eviction. At the end of the day, in some areas that we know about municipalities that are making bylaws, to say people cannot do informal trading or people cannot do certain activities. And because we do not have a paradigm shift to say this is how the city or the space accommodates the poor, at the end of the day we criminalize poverty. Right? Because you are poor, you should go to jail for being poor because the city doesn't have a space for you. And these are the kind of decisions we want to do. What is beyond the remit of this piece of legislation? Land use in our rural areas is still largely state land. The unresolved tenure issues still affect us. There is a question of traditional leadership and the weak linkages with the formal municipal governance system, community participation, and how do we craft a model for public participation and giving democratic expression in the rural areas. And these are the questions we deal with. We also know that planning in our rural areas is quite challenging because of non-availability of special data sets. We know that the land that is primarily surveyed are in your urban areas. In the rural areas, there's no surveyed land. It's land under traditional leadership. It's not formally within the DIS office or the cadastral system. It makes planning quite relatively difficult. So enforcement of land use becomes a challenge. Indeed, in our rural areas, I used to take a municipality in Mpumalanga like Mstikaliqua. You look at the town planning scheme, it only exists for a town of Ermelo or something like that. And that's the typical case in all our rural spaces. Planning is only done in few formal white towns in those areas. And we need something slightly broader and more comprehensive. So in summary, economically, spatially, environmentally, we do not think we have reached the desired state in terms of land management. I've already alluded that the first effort at seeking solution, Chairperson, to this problem that we've attempted to summarize is via the Development Facilitation Act. It was promulgated as an interim measure. The key features of the DFA, it proposed the development principles, and that we will show in the new bill how we've packaged or repackaged the development principles. It also spoke about land development objectives. Municipalities were enjoined in terms of the DFA to do land development objectives, which is actually the predecessor to the current IDPs that you have in municipalities. Development tribunals were also set up by provinces to take care of land development applications, and Chairperson will be taking you through the challenges we face, especially out of the Constitutional Court judgment of 2010 and the constitutionality of the development tribunals. I've alluded to the green paper already about the green paper that was sent, that was produced, the Development and Planning Commission, the white paper, and the first draft. And like my DG stated, the first draft of this bill. Honourable members, the first draft of a bill that was approved by Cabinet on this subject was in June 2001. It was published in the Gazette in July 2001. Next month will make it 11 years that we have officially, as government, proposed a solution to this subject. We'll tell you what has happened in the interceding month. But in terms of the white paper, the white paper said a lot of things. It accepted a lot of proposals that was made in the green paper. But it offered us the hope that we will rationalize all these laws that we've outlined into one national system. Indeed, the white paper made a promise that we will share with Chairperson that we were going to have only one national law and not even provincial pieces of legislation. The YPF proposed special development framework. We're glad to know that a special development framework took over, or has been at a municipal level since the Municipal Systems Act of 2000. It also spoke about land use schemes, and not land use schemes for just the urban areas, land use schemes for all the areas within a municipality. So the bill will be proposing that all the land in the municipality must be covered by a wall-to-wall land use scheme as a primary instrument for land use management. Chairperson, we must also note that between 1995, when the DFA was enacted, and years afterwards, there were a lot of other activities that took place out of our department that have significant impact on this piece of legislation. And we do concede that the Municipal Structures Act, the Municipal Systems Act, the question of the introduction of the integrated development planning, and the SDF, as part of this restructuring of the municipality system, also have implications for what we're doing. The DFA, maybe I should just state this, especially as we go into the recent judgment of the Constitutional Court, the DFA was used as an alternative in many provinces. In Western Cape, it was not used at all. In Free State, it was used, but not the Development Tribunal was the Development Tribunal was not used. But it's been a very useful piece of legislation in many areas to do so many things that the ordinances could not do, or DFA was applied in areas where the ordinances did not apply. We will concede that it has helped. It has helped a lot to do a couple of things. It has been used for tenure security in some areas. It has been used for tourism, game farms. It has been used for golf estates and a couple of things that were not originally the intention of the DFA. I think the major criticisms is that, as opposed to the noble intentions that Joe Slovo and other leaders thought about, it has been abused largely to undertake more high-end private development in that respect. I think it has also become more complex. People take senior counsel, senior lawyers to go and argue cases before development tribunals, and I've already alluded to the fact that between 2007 and 2008, we came to Parliament with a version of a bill. I think, in summary, the bill was not passed. But by 2008, the bill lapsed. And between 2008, we continued engaging and working on this bill. But, Chairperson, I think the critical thing is for us to move away from 2008 to the judgment of the Constitutional Court that came to us on 18th of June 2010. The Constitutional Court found Chapters 5 and 6 of the Development Facilitation Act to be constitutionally invalid. Chapters 5 and 6 are basically they deal with the powers of development tribunals to consider applications, to decide land development applications. And the challenge with that is that the key reasoning was that to the extent that provinces set up these development tribunals to take land use decisions, there was an impermissible intrusion into the powers of municipalities, because that essentially is at the heart of the powers of municipalities to decide. The court also found it wanting to the extent that development tribunals were taking decisions that did not give due regard to the special development frameworks of municipalities. The court gave us an alternative between correcting the defect that the court pointed out in the DFA or coming up with a new piece of legislation. Chairperson, to the extent that we said that since 2001 the government has had a bill in place, we did not consider amending the DFA. Rather, we thought instead of doing a half job of passing a piece of legislation that we all knew, or we've always known was an interim piece of legislation, the effort was to concentrate more on coming up with a replacement piece of legislation, which we promised since June 2001. So this bill is a direct response to some of the policy challenges that we've outlined, Chairperson, as well as the Constitutional Court judgment that gave us 24 months from the 18th of June to correct the defect in the DFA. the 24 months will expire on the 17th of June, which is barely 17 days away from now. We don't count weekends, we try left for 2 weeks. We currently have an application before the Constitutional Court. No decision has been reached yet, but in those provinces that there are no alternatives for the DFA, Chairperson, we are optimistic that we are hoping that the Constitutional Court will give us an extension to the 24-month suspension of the constitutional invalidity. So we would not want to be in violation of the order of the Constitutional Court in that regard. We post 2010, we have a bill before this Honourable House Chairperson, which we have certain objectives before us. The objectives of the bill include, and I've moved to slide number 30 now. The objective of this bill is to provide a uniform, effective, and comprehensive system of spatial planning. Coming from the background of one history of different systems across the country, coming from a background of almost lack of visioning or pieces of legislation which do not talk to the current reality of the post-1994 government, coming from a reality that in terms of the new constitution, municipalities now acquire new status in terms of their powers to do land use planning. And the fact that many municipalities have never done land use planning before, we think at the national level there is need to come up with this piece of legislation that we do that effective and comprehensive system for spatial planning and land use management. We've spoken about the question of exclusion and the previous piece of legislation. So we think this piece of legislation will assist us in doing that. This legislation will provide for development principles, norms and standards that will govern land use management. We hope we will achieve sustainable and efficient and better use of our land. In fact, the white paper in 2001 was subtitled Wise Land Use, and I think that's the objective. To the extent that in spatial planning, the three spheres must necessarily interrelate and coordinate their activities. As complex as it may even appear, we want to propose a system of cooperative government and intergovernmental relations among the three spheres of government, and hopefully and lastly, redress the imbalances of the past, deal with the question of equity in spatial development planning and land use management systems. Chairperson, the bill and the kind of tools we have proposed in the bill, we are proposing development principles. It's not the first time that we're proposing principles. The DFA also has principles. We've attempted to narrow down principles to five cogent principles: special equity, sustainability, good administration, and things which will assist us in achieving questions of transformation in the environment, restructuring of the space. And these principles will then guide any decision maker, whether you want to do SDF or you want to do land use scheme or you want to take a decision. It will inform you in doing all this. Since it will bind all the three spheres. And these are the principles that we've proposed. The norms and standards are basically tools that we have said the minister responsible for administering this piece of legislation, will have the powers to impose norms and standards that will assist us in doing a couple of things that we want to do. And we can give you a couple of examples. But we're saying that if you want to do development, and there are things around inclusionary housing principles to say, how do you say that when you do development in 20,000 hectares of land, you require 5% of it for low-income housing? Or how do you deal with the question of public spaces? We know developments are happening, large-scale developments are happening in different parts of the country. There are no considerations for public spaces. There are no considerations for schools, hospitals, and some of those things. I mean, if we're doing new development in the northern suburbs of any of our cities, we should know that the age bracket of those living there will be about maybe childbearing ages. So you need to talk about primary schools, secondary schools, and these are the kind of norms that we want to put in land use so that we just don't do building that doesn't talk about the integration of all these factors. And these norms and standards may also be used to protect agricultural land, for instance, So we have provided in the bill that in addition to the minister responsible being able to use norms and standards, other ministers that have land-related responsibilities may also call on the Minister of Land Affairs to ensure that we use these norms and standards to protect land uses. And land use is not just for this department. It's across different ranges and different levels. So we're hoping that the norms and standards will then assist us in driving some of these goals. Sometimes norms and standards, when not properly applied, may be too prescriptive, but we think we will deal with that better as we go into implementation of the piece of legislation. I think I've already alluded to this. The minister will also be able to do regulations to support many things that we have in the bill. He will also be able to do guidelines. And I think maybe before I even leave the question of norms and standards and guidelines, we were engaging with colleagues in Western Cape the other day, and in the question of if you look at development of golf estates, for instance, Chairperson, in relation to water uses, we know that golf estates use water disproportionately. And if you don't do proper assessment of what you need in your area, a municipality may just be approving developments in respect of golf estates without looking at the implication on water or implication of agriculture. And these are the kind of norms that we think we can introduce. I mean, one other area that we're discussing with colleagues the other day is if you look at the impact of malls, for instance. We all think malls is a big sign of development. But in reality, if you don't study the impact of malls on local businesses, malls are largely owned and they have pick and pay and this multinational. I mean, these are corporate. But we're saying that we need to organize our land uses in such a way that we also don't destroy local economies. And these are the kind of things we think we can do by prescribing norms within which municipalities do grant approval, so that you don't overdo a particular line of development to the detriment of the poor or the question of special redress. I will skip guidelines, Chairperson. In terms of intergovernmental relations support and monitoring, in terms of the bill, we're saying that the minister, within available resources, will continue to support other spheres in doing their work properly. At the moment, at the national level, we spend quite some resources in developing guidelines for municipal SDF so that municipalities will develop credible spatial development frameworks. We supporting many municipalities in developing spatial development frameworks. We're doing precinct plans for them. We're working on guidelines for doing precinct planning so that they can do proper level of planning so that we don't continue to do development. We've seen some pictures coming out of a lot of studies we've done to say that post-1994, we have not improved substantially in many areas. There are a lot of unplanned developments. There are a lot of developments that are not still integrating different land uses. And we think the minister will continue to do this without usurping the powers of these other spheres. We recognize the fact that both national level and provinces, they have a role towards municipalities. We have largely kept away from over-regulating provinces. This bill largely regulates municipalities. We have created a space within the same chapter in the bill to say that provinces may define matters of provincial interest. We are hoping that provinces will repeal the laws that are inconsistent with this piece of legislation. We're inviting provinces to make laws which are consistent with these laws so that we all speak with one voice, and that we will share that space of monitoring and support with provinces. We also think that matters that we have not dealt with in this bill, provinces may deal with those kind of matters. So provincial governments will continue to support municipalities in the preparation, adoption, and amendment of their land use schemes. They will do better coordination together, will do that. And they will also continue to strengthen the capacities of municipalities. We've attempted to define the role of national government, role of provinces, and role of municipalities. The judgment of the Constitutional Court in the DFA case and a couple of judgments, Chairperson, that have come from our court in recent days have reaffirmed the principle that municipalities must continue to play a very strong role in land use planning. At a national level, we think what we should do is to assist municipalities do what the Constitution says they should do. We do not want to do it for them. We do not want to take over their role. But we want to ensure that we integrate our policies so that they are given expression to at the municipal scale. One of the critical tools that we're going to be using to restructure our space is the special development framework. Chairperson, at the municipal level, I've already stated that the Systems Act already said municipalities must do special development frameworks. But special development frameworks is the key and the primary planning tool that will show the vision of a municipality in the next 10, 15, 20 years. How do they see their space being used? How do they deal with the question of economic growth? How do they see linkages between transport, human settlement, agriculture, and a range of purposes? The special development frameworks will follow a very extensive public participation process, and if adopted, we are hoping that every municipality will be enjoined to adopt SDFs. They've already been doing that. The question of the credibility of the SDFs is what we're now worried about, and we're supporting with policies, with guidelines, to ensure that municipalities truly do SDFs, which inform their decision-making processes. We are proposing in this bill that municipalities review their SDFs every 5 years. Because of the nature of the burden of the past special structure, we're saying that 5 years is short enough for them to review whether they are really achieving their goals in terms of the special vision. Land use management, the key primary land use management tool is the land use scheme. Land use schemes will derive almost after you do the SDF. You set out a vision, but land use schemes is more of a recorder of the development rights in that area. We do believe that within 5 years from the enactment of this piece of legislation, that all municipalities must have wall-to-wall land use schemes. It must be consistent with and give effect to the municipal SDF. All land development applications must be consistent with the land use schemes. The land use scheme will have a force of law and will bind all owners of land, all owners and users of land within the areas. Chairperson, honorable members, in order to decide land development applications, land use applications and land development applications, which we recognize now in terms of the Constitution that is the primary responsibility of the municipalities, we're saying that the municipal council must manage the process of doing special development frameworks, must manage the process and approve both the SDFs and the land use schemes. But when it comes to land development management, at an applications level, we're saying that the municipalities must set up municipal planning tribunals to discharge these functions on behalf of every municipality. We are very conscious, we are acutely aware of the capacity challenges in many municipalities, and we're expressly encouraging municipalities to consider joining hands together to form one planning tribunal if they think they are either unable to set up their own or the volume of applications, because indeed, whilst in some municipalities, thousands of applications are received on a daily or monthly basis, in some municipalities, you barely get any serious appreciable development. So in the bill, we're saying that we are promoting the spirit of cooperation, where two or more municipalities within a district may come together to set up a single joint planning tribunal. In terms of composition, our proposal is that municipal council must consider for appointment at least 5 persons to sit on this planning tribunals, with 3 officials and 2 non-officials at least. They can extend the number, and we're also saying in terms of this bill that in respect of certain smaller applications, they can delegate the power to one official to deal with. But our proposal, Chairperson, is that politicians should not sit on the planning tribunals for the purposes of taking a primary decision, but those that are appointed by the politicians must use the special development frameworks and the land use scheme as the guiding principles to inform their decision. And if the application is necessary in terms of those decisions, we think it should be fine. We've created a limited right of appeal, which is almost mirroring what we have in Section 62 of the Systems Act, and I think it's not part of this presentation, that politicians will then consider appeals from decisions of the planning tribunals if they are not satisfied. We have kept out of regulating the provinces in this piece of legislation because we've considered that provinces should make additional legislation that will support this. Different provinces have different ideas about how they wish to take the decision further in respect of promoting their own interests. But at a national level, we are saying that whilst we recognize that municipalities are the primary land use regulators, it may be necessary that because of the scale or because of the impact or because of the magnitude of a particular land development application, the minister or at national level, the national sphere may be interested in that application. There are different types, there are different examples you can give, Chairperson. There may be a land development application that crosses beyond the municipality. I mean, if you take housing, for instance, it's a land development decision that crosses a few municipalities. I think the three metros in Gauteng. The Minister of Transport is talking about a train station from a major train from Gauteng to KwaZulu-Natal. There may be, we cannot give enough examples, but what we're saying is that there may be some application which goes beyond the capacity of the municipality, either because it goes beyond the boundary. I mean, the other day we were meeting with Department of Public Enterprises and the state-owned enterprises. When ESCOM intends to put their pylons in major infrastructure development situations, it sometimes goes beyond one municipality. And the question is that do you submit one application to one municipality and they have different dates and you publish differently? Or do you want to take over those kind of big applications that goes beyond municipalities, either decide it at a provincial level or take it as a matter of national interest? And these are the kind of things. There may be matters that have international relations implications or defense implications. And in those cases, Chairperson, what we are proposing is that notice of such application must be given to the minister. If the applicant is aware that the application affects national interest, give notice to the minister. Alternatively, if the minister is aware, minister could join in the application, or the municipal planning tribunal may refer the application to the minister. We're saying that the minister may either join in the application or the minister may call in that application for decision making, and that's for what we feel of national interest. Chairperson, in terms of the bill, I think we've got seven chapters in the bill, and chapter one talks to the normal definitions of terms used in the bill, the outline of the planning system, the categories. Chapter two outlines the special planning system and the powers of the minister to set norms and standards. Chapter three talks to the role of the minister and the provinces in further monitoring and supporting the municipalities. It also talks to the differentiated approach. We are recognizing the fact that all the municipalities are not of the same type. So we should take a differentiated approach to managing our relations with municipalities. Chapter 4 deals with the special development frameworks at national, provincial, and municipal level, and the possibility of a regional special development framework, as well as the statuses of those. Chapter 5 deals with the land use schemes, the authority of the processes for developing land use schemes, the status of the land use schemes, the objectives of the land use schemes, and the question of the alignment of authorization where other land development legislation provides for similar or related approvals, which must still be done. But what we're saying is that all land development applications must go to a municipality as the authority of first instance. We spoke about municipal planning tribunals already, the composition, the appeals against those decisions, the question of joint considerations and joint decision-making. Chapter 7 is almost your general provision clause, which deals with the initial commencement of registration, the powers of the minister to do regulations, delegation of powers to officials, and a very important clause, which we call the non-impediment of function. And here we're saying that a decision of a municipal planning tribunal must not be stopped simply because somebody says that it affects the value of their property. You can take it on review, you can get compensation for it, but we think that transformation should not be stopped simply on the basis of economic implication of that decision, that the value of property is affected. We've also created a space for offenses and penalties for wrongful land uses. We propose to repeal a few pieces of legislation, including the Removal of Restrictions Act, the Development Facilitation Act, the Fiscal Planning Act, and we've dealt with transitional provisions in terms of the bill. Chairperson, just a little bit of discussion around. We've had a very extensive public participation process. We've been on this for the past 11 years, but in the past 3 years, we can report, Chairperson, that we've been to all the municipalities in the country. We've had several meetings with different provinces. We've had a lot of engagement with private stakeholders. We've had workshops. We've had calls for written comments. We've had different levels of engagement. We've been to NEDLAC. We've been to South African Property Owners Association. We've met with AgriSA. We've met with different role players. Yet, we cannot say that this bill is a matter of agreement amongst others. Because of the competing nature of the issues that we're dealing with, because of the different interests that we manage, because of the multi-sectoral nature of the piece of legislation, Chairperson, as a department, we can share with you tons of written comments we've received. With the state law advisors, we've looked at some of these comments. We've amended the bill several times. But yet, we're saying that there are still some issues that may not necessarily come to you. Otherwise, it would be deceptive to say that there is common consensus across the country. The question of municipal planning. While the Constitutional Court said to us that rezoning, land use planning is the primary responsibility of municipalities, some provinces are of the view that you cannot leave it to municipalities alone. That this same piece of land is the land that the national is interested in, that the province is interested in, that the municipality is interested in. In terms of the DSA, we had a development tribunal that was set up by a province. They took decisions not giving due consideration to instruments designed at municipal level. The court said we were wrong. Whether or not we've adequately interpreted that, we've attempted to in our way. But one of the things is that there are still views out there that we're giving too much to municipalities. Some people are not agreeing necessarily that our interpretation of municipal planning powers is indeed correct. So it leads to the next one, that have we adequately defined the role with regards to spatial planning and land use management? Chairperson, in the 11 years that we've been engaging on this piece of legislation, we have set for ourselves the ambitious target of truly reaching consensus. If you lock a set of town planners and lawyers in this room and another in that room, you will need another set of meetings to reconcile those two. We've almost been able to reconcile them, but we believe that what we are presenting is a modest proposal in terms of how the three spheres operate, because we are all interested. The question of capacity of municipalities, I will give the example of Free State. If we say that municipalities must do land use management, in the Free State, no single municipality in this country has ever taken a decision on land use management. Every land use application in Free State is taken to the MSC at the provincial level. Now, this law says municipalities. So there is a genuine concern on the capacity of municipalities to do what we are saying they should do. But I can report that as a department, we've got a lot of things we've been doing in the past 6 years, especially to support municipalities, because we're saying that we cannot necessarily use lack of capacity to deprive a sphere of the constitutionally vested powers. It's a nice situation because we're conscious of capacity, yet we're saying that the law says they must do so. So we've dealt with capacity differently. We're working on an electronic land use management system now that we'll deploy to municipalities. We say that it should set up tribunals, and nothing says that a person serving in a municipal planning tribunal in municipality A cannot serve in municipality B. We have also said in this bill that they can set up joint planning tribunals. We have said that all the municipalities within a district can set up one single planning tribunal, as long as they appoint them. So we found creative ways to say, whilst the municipalities must do it themselves, council resolutions can say that we are agreeing together to do it jointly by these persons we are appointing. So we are saying that the question of capacity remains a concern to many of our stakeholders, but we find a way that we are saying that these are the alternatives to dealing with these issues. We also know that we don't have a one-size-fits-all. We have your big metros that we ourselves want to learn from. How are they doing it right? So that we can use that as a basis to teach others. So the bill has consciously taken an approach about municipal differentiation, that we must recognize the categories of municipality, even though the Constitution tells us about metros, districts, and locals. But we need to, and we've expressly factored that, so that even when we talk about reporting, the depth of how they deal with this, we want to give a recognition. Others feel we might not have done enough. Others feel, especially, that the challenges in the rural municipalities we have not adequately dealt with it. Others will say that this law is made for your urban municipalities and not your rural municipalities. But Chairperson, we can take you through specific aspects of this bill that we've attempted to deal with some of those things. Support and monitoring. There are comments we have received pointing to the fact that we've given too much power to municipalities. We are setting up for failures. Agriculture will remind us that municipalities cannot manage agriculturally. But we're saying that we can share with them practical measures, which are not necessarily located in a piece of legislation that will assist us in dealing with this. I think the last word, whilst it is certainly beyond us, Chairperson and Honourable Members, it's a concern that there are multiple jurisdictions still over land in China. Just in February, there was a case before the Constitutional Court, where in Western Cape here, people got mining approvals from the Minister of Mineral Resources. The municipality says, no, you will not do mining there because it is also our land. They said, no, we can't get approval from a minister, and the municipality has a veto right on that decision. The judgment came out just weeks back. The court said, no, you can get your approval elsewhere. You still need the approval of the municipality. That's what the Constitutional Court is telling us. So the question of multiple jurisdictions over special plan and land use management is a reality that we're dealing with. It's a legitimate concern that people have that we have not sufficiently rationalized the environment as to synchronize and harmonize the processes for planning. As unfortunate as it is, we cannot say that the Department of Environmental Affairs should necessarily submit their power to do environmental authorization to municipalities as part of this. What we're saying is that we can align some of these approvals. There is a law on heritage. It gives authority to other people to approve certain things in respect of heritage. It's part of land use management, but unfortunately it sits elsewhere. It's a dream we hope we get there, but it's still a concern that is raised by Chairperson, and we hope we can get there. I can skip some of these things, but I think they've said we have not repealed the laws enough. There are questions around appeals. People said you cannot exclude politicians from taking land use decisions. We are saying that can you take all decisions to councillors? But I think as a policy position, the official position of government is that under the direction of the municipal council, a tribunal says approved by that council should take the primary decision. We are saying that appeals from a municipal planning tribunal, from a tribunal appointed by council, should go to politicians. Some people are saying that it should go to the province. Those are kind of challenges that we still have. On our clause that talks about non-impediment of function, that we're saying that you should not be able to stop a land use decision simply because it affects the value of your property. Some people say the value of property is the most important criteria, but we're saying that it's within a basket of factors. But if it is the only factor, a decision must go ahead because we have a higher order goal of achieving integration. These are some of the differences that we still have. We thought we were making a, I think this is Hor, I think we wrote, we thought we were making a national framework legislation. Some people think it's too prescriptive. But for Chairperson, I will almost skip this, but we've worked largely with many national departments, including the National Planning Commission, in drafting this piece of legislation. We had a interministerial committee at national level. We also set up an interdepartmental task team that has been working with us in drafting this piece of legislation. We produced a bill which Cabinet approved in March 2011. It was published in May. We had extensive public comments, though it was officially for 1 month from May to June 2011. But within that 1 month, Chairperson, we can give you assurances that we crisscrossed the whole country. We had workshops on that bill that was published in 2011. That was last year. We had several meetings. We continue to have that engagement. We've been in NEDLAC since June last year. We've met separately with different people. We reported back to Cabinet March this year. The bill we took to Cabinet, in our view, we took into consideration all the comments that we got in the past 1 year. So it was the second time we're going to Cabinet this year, after the 6th of May publication last year. Our Cabinet again approved this year that we may now introduce to Parliament. We have a very detailed consultation report that we can share with you how we've dealt with all the comments we've received. And we actually had about 110 written comments, different departments, and these are the former comments that were received within the former publication process. We dealt with those. We did a regulatory impact assessment that we completed last year. I've already alluded to these meetings. We continue to meet with provinces. Some provinces, we've been with them this year alone over 8 times, just meeting bilateral workshops, debating and engaging. We continue to do that in order to enrich this piece of legislation. We're still in NEDLAC. We thought we had finished negotiations at NEDLAC. They brought new issues. There's a draft report now for adoption, and we hope as soon as that report is finally adopted by NEDLAC, it will be presented as part of this process. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Female Chair. It's a long presentation. Thank you very much for this long presentation. I think now we are all here, we are all listening carefully. I'm going to give the honorable members to ask the questions, the clarity. I've allowed only the honorable members to ask the questions, not the stakeholders, because we're not having the public hearing, we were having the briefing for the honorable members. So I will allow only the honorable members to ask the questions. Before I forget, I will ask the department to give us all the lists of the stakeholders consulted. So we need those submissions also here. Thank you very much. I think I must hand over to the honorable members. I'll see Honorable MacGyver. Honorable from Portola in the Western Cape, Honorable KZN. Okay, let me start from this side in this sequence, this way. Okay. Honorable Mark, I will start from you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just a point of clarity. I know that monitoring and supporting of provinces and municipalities you are in line with the constitution. But can you elaborate further in that notion? Because most of the time this is in papers. And I'm not happy with the capacity of the other municipality categories. And the public involvement thereof. I know that should be a law, but what about the capacity of other municipalities? Other municipalities are not willing to combine with other municipalities, you know. They think they have a capacity, but how are you going to solve that? Thank you.
Okay. Did you capture the question? Okay, fine. Sir?
Thank you. It would appear as we've been busy for 11 years preparing this, that the period of time to the 17th of June is inappropriately short. That's the one thing. We need to study many of these things. We've been told there were comments at the public participation, and these were varied. So we'd have to have a look at that. My standing committee has been pressuring the province to bring a new act out, the Land Use Planning Act, because this particular act
the national one, hasn't come to the fore. Now we're glad that it's come to the fore, because we'll have to adapt our Land Use Planning Act for the Western Cape to appropriate parts of this act. But the time is far too short for us to integrate and correct this and see where the differences are. The other thing that I've noticed is there's mention made of traditional leaders, but 17 million people in South Africa are living in the communal areas of South Africa. We're not addressing the ownership rights. We're not addressing the land use of those areas. 30% of South Africa's high potential agricultural land lies within the homeland, the old homelands, and it's not being utilized at all. People are living in absolute poverty on land with the appropriate technology. Instead of producing 350 kilograms per hectare, it could produce 8 tons per hectare. The Agricultural Research Council did that work. The other one is 40% of South Africa's water runs through the homeland. The Mbubu River takes 30%, and I know there's a major project in the Eastern Cape, the Asgisa project, which could spread water right across the Eastern Cape, but it also is in communal areas. So I'd look for something more appropriate than just a passing mention of it in the Act. But I think the main message is it's inappropriately short. And I think the Constitutional Court, in view of the importance of this bill, and I'm not denigrating the importance of this bill, I think the Constitutional Court should take it into consideration and give far more time for provinces to consider this. I think the implications of the bill are very wide-ranging.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable Bob.
This way.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. First of all, I would like to know this bill that seeks to deal with the land reform. It taking into consideration the rural areas, especially where people have settled, where, as it has been said by the honorable member here, in Western Cape, whether the bill considers the land use and provision of water in those areas. Yeah, I would like to get what the bill says about that. The presenter has mentioned quite a number of ordinances that are still in operation in various provinces and so forth. Does this bill seek to neutralize all those bills, remove them, or are they still going to continue? And if they are still going to continue, what purposes are they serving? The DFA was an interim legislation, according to the presenter, and why? That's the question. Why was it an interim legislation? I would also like to know, Chair, what does the bill say about municipalities that are surrounded by land that is privately owned? And as development takes place, eventually municipalities are going to run out of land. What does the bill say what those municipalities should do? Because obviously a development is an expansion. A development cannot concentrate on a particular place. There will come a time where the municipalities will run out of land. What does the municipality have to do now in terms of their growth? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Honest.
Thank you very much. The first one, Chairperson, which was raised, it's the issue of capacity.
of these local municipalities. Now we are bringing a bill, we are actually bringing a budget to them, Chairperson. We found some of them can't implement their own IDP programs because of the lack of capacity. How are they going to deal with the issue? The second issue, the question for me, does the department have the capacity to deal with the issue of evaluating and monitoring the department, the national department? Because as a custodian of the bill, in terms of the responsibility of the minister. Chairperson, the other vital one for me is that I can't find the issue of the special development framework, because there's a local one, the regional one, the national one. That the special development framework become a conflict between local and the province as we speak. It brings us to the issue of the functions and powers in relation to that. Because I know there was a court case dealing with that. When the municipality feels this is my jurisdiction, the province says I also have a responsibility in terms of the regional spatial development framework. So there must be clear roles and functions because there is some tension between the different spheres of government presently. I just want clarity: is the minister going to keep his responsibility in terms of the land use or the regulation? Is it going to be still the regulator in terms of the land use, in terms of of his responsibility? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Zagi.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of South Africa, we have about 9 provinces, as the presenter has actually alluded correctly to say, we have got different problems in each in the provinces for in terms of the municipal spatial planning and land use management. For instance, in KZN, most of the land is under Ingonyama Trust. So I just want to check whether how is this bill going to address that? Because most of our municipalities are rural municipalities. That is the first thing. The second thing is, this bill in any way going to ensure the establishment of land bank in South Africa so that we take audit of how much land do we have? How much vacant land do we have as South Africa? The issue of audiences has been addressed by the previous.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Honor?
Yes, sure. Sorry. Thanks, Chair. And also thanks to the presenter. Gee, yes, this is very rushed. This is the first time I've had this bill, you know, sat down and discussed it, so it's a very complicated bill. My only things that I'd like to see, all those submissions that have been made by the various people, also again has been alluded to, whether any cognizance has been taken of the traditional leaders and customary land, has this been taken into account? This is a big issue. Also, this bill seems to cut right across provincial governments, right down to local government level, and one just thinks of the constitutionality of that. For example, on page 45 here, it says the national interest includes, and I quote, strategic national policy objectives, principles or priorities, including food security, it could be anything, international relations, and cooperation, defense, and economic unity. This, I don't know how much this is going to intrude into local government level and what the implications are going to be of that. There is also a document here that has been given to me just by the Legal Resources Center, which I had a look where they're leading to mineral rights and mining. But, you know, whilst there hasn't been this great cooperation between the Department of Mineral Affairs, Environment and Water Affairs, they're putting a body together to try and coordinate mining rights with water rights with the environment. How does this now tie in with that? So it seems to override and go straight through all that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. KZN?
Chairperson, thank you. My other colleagues and the chairperson of COPTA from KZN, our sister or boy, have covered me partly with regard to the large piece of land that belongs to Yingonyama Trust Board. Especially with regard to time, it seems as if time is too limited to engage our key traditional leaders to have them contributed towards this bill. Because I believe when we go forward, we need to make it a point that all of us are on the same footing. But the nature of the bill, I heard the presenter using nice words and saying they want to synchronize, harmonize all pieces of legislation. But we need to engage all of the stakeholders. I heard him saying we are only left with few days. It seems as if the period of grace expires on the 17th of June. In my view, we won't be able to engage all relevant stakeholders. With that, Chair, I would say thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I wanted to hear from the department if, yeah, they said that they are relying for the Constitutional Court to give them the grace. If not, give them, what is it going to happen? Mm-hmm. What is it going to happen? Because now it's a short time of, and we need to consult our provinces also, and to take also our relevant stakeholders. Because I understand that yes, there's a list of stakeholders that I've seen here down there that have been consulted, but we need to also engage ourselves with the stakeholders. So I want to know what is the process if we go to the constitution and that is, they said no. It started for a long time. We are not going to give you the grace now. What is it going to happen? Thank you. I think I must hand over to the official to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are two categories of questions that have been asked. There are questions that specifically relate to this bill, which I'm going to ask my colleague Sunday to respond to. But I think there are other bigger questions beyond this bill that have also been asked. They relate, among others, to the issue of communal land ownership in general, including Ingonyama Trust. There's a separate policy process that deals with the communal land tenure system. We are working with traditional leaders from all over the country in developing that new policy insofar as communal areas are concerned. So we hope that before the end of this calendar year, we'll have a policy in place that deals with communal areas. But it does not mean that communal areas will remain some kind of an island in which this bill does not apply. It will apply in the communal areas as well, including in Yama Trust land. It will not be exempt as part of South Africa. There's a program that was introduced by the President in the State of the Nation address, the Infrastructure Build Program, where there are 17 integrated strategic projects across the country that relate to infrastructure. They affect the whole country, including developing infrastructure in communal areas, harvesting water that is flowing into the sea, umtavuna and so on. There is a huge infrastructure plan that is in place. There is the Presidential Infrastructure Commission that is driving those infrastructure projects. That Presidential Infrastructure Commission is meeting currently as we speak. So there are big plans that we announce also in terms of budget by the Minister of Finance in terms of bringing about infrastructure, including construction of dams in the communal areas. We are already working in the revitalization of irrigation schemes in the country, including Taung and many others, including in the Eastern Cape. The department is mindful that for it to be able to implement this bill, we'll have to build capacity. We will build that capacity to the extent that we can afford to build that capacity. The challenge our minister always raises is that if national government and provinces were to play their proper roles in supporting municipalities to implement their own IDP programs, we would not be having these challenges. But instead, many government departments, national and provincial, instead of supporting local municipalities, they parachute there, go and do things themselves there, and they don't leave any capacity at the local level. One of the things that this bill must try and do is to create that synergy, to try and provide that rationalization in terms of what it proposes. Isn't the proposal of municipalities pulling together, sharing resources to be able to implement the bill? And finally, on the land bank, there is a separate process, as we've said, that is the Green Paper on Land Reform, which proposes a particular institution that will conduct that kind of an audit to determine who owns what land in South Africa, so that we all know who owns what land. This bill will regulate the use of the land, but the database that you are referring to in terms of holding land will be a function of a different institution that we are proposing. It is in the parliamentary program. We are hoping that at some point we'll come to Parliament and introduce a bill that seeks to establish that particular commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Before you answer, you talk about the implement, to train the councillors, whatever, to give them the capacity. Now, let's assume that the bill passed now, and then started. When are you going to start to do this capacity? Because the other municipalities can't even implement now their IDPs. When are you going to do that? Because I think, in my understanding, I think you can first start going to do the capacity of all those small municipalities to be ready about the bill that is coming. Now the bill is here, and then you said that you are going to go and to do the training, whatever. And then what is it? Let's assume that the bill passed, and then there are those municipalities, they can't even implement the IDP now. You know, so I'm listening to what you said, but I think that thing will not implement. It will be like the IDPs that they don't even implement. This bill, they can't do it because this bill is too heavy for the small municipalities. Thank you. That's a comment.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, may I just start from the last question, because of its importance. The question of the deadline imposed by the Constitutional Court judgment. We, right from the date the judgment came on the 18th of June 2010, we had been very worried about our capacity to comply, especially that it's beyond the power of the minister. It's largely is that of Parliament, we're in your hands in terms of timeline. We tried as we could, but we were also conscious of the fact that what about if come 17th of June there was no extension? What we've done, Chairperson, is that we
our first choice was to get the bill passed. But conscious that we could not, we looked at a few options. Some of those options are not the very best. But as I stated, Western Cape, for instance, never implemented the DSA. So there was no problem in Western Cape. They had their own province. They were using the old ordinance, the 1986 ordinance. They continued to use that. If you take housing, for instance, it was a choice between the ordinance and the DSA. In fact, the Constitutional Court case came out of the fact that there was a competition between the DSA and the ordinance. We looked at ourselves. The court, even in June 2010, decided that no application could be received within Johannesburg. So they were using the ordinance from the 18th of June, exclusively in Johannesburg. Same thing for Itequinin and KZN. So what has happened, I happen to cut a long story short, is that we had no challenge really in Western Cape because we thought they will continue to use the old order legislation in Western Cape. What we've done in Gauteng is to say, if this bill is not passed, will you be kind to continue to use the old order legislation? That was the law before 1995. In KwaZulu-Natal, they passed a piece of legislation in 2008. It has its own challenges, but it's still there in the law books. They've done a lot in capacitation municipalities, a lot of challenges with implementing some of the provisions of the piece of legislation. So we said they will reverse the 2008 piece of legislation in KwaZulu-Natal. So there is no vacuum in KZN, as we speak. It's not the most desirable state because we would wish to have this umbrella national framework legislation. In the Free State, the municipalities never exercised these powers. It was centralized in the province. They also will continue to use the ordinance pending this legislation. So DFA really has limited application. So we've taken four provinces away. Northwest is more problematic. They have different problems. They need the DFA. Limpopo, once the ordinance, the transfer ordinance applied to the old white area of Limpopo, there was the Vendor Land Control Act, there was Leboa, there were all the old land. There's no institution to be able to continue using that legislation. There is a real problem in Limpopo. There is a problem in Northwest. Mpumalanga, the ordinance has been used in your former white areas. But in Kwandebele, Kwangwane, and part of Bushbuckery, there is no law apart from the DFA. So Chairperson, what we've done in our applications to the Constitutional Court, we've stated this possibility, that if we do not get an extension, we can revert to the old other laws in maybe five, six provinces. Eastern Cape, they can revert to the old order law, but there are pockets that there are no law. But we need extension absolutely in Northwest, in Limpopo, part of Mpumalanga. Northern Cape, they also passed a piece of legislation in 1998, the Northern Cape Planning and Development Law. Though it was tied to the DFA, there is a problem because there will not be a process for appealing, but they can still take primary decisions. They appeal in terms of the DFA. So it's also a part problem, but we will really, really be in trouble by the 17th of June if we do not get extension in at least three provinces. We filed the papers before the Constitutional Court. We're waiting for dates from the court. We are hopeful, or Chairperson, we are at the mercy of both yourself and the Constitutional Court in terms of going forward. Yeah. So that's as to the deadline. Chairperson, on the other issues, monitoring and support. In terms of our monitoring role and what the bill provides for, a number of this we do at the moment. If we take the IDP, for instance, a part of IDP in terms of Section 26E of the Systems Act is that of the SDF. The municipalities post 2000, all they did was to get consultants to draw some maps for them, copy pen, red and blue. They just draw some maps and say, this is your special vision. Because they were more interested in complying, the law says you must do SDF, they did something. The credibility of those SDFs as a basis for action, as a basis to guide intervention was not there. as a department, we have been busy supporting municipalities, not just in doing the SDS with them. We have done what we call guidelines for developing municipal SDS as a department. And that's the kind of monitoring we're talking about, the kind of support we offer them. We're on version 8 now, which we're just printing for finality. But in the past 2 years, we've been rolling out the guidelines for municipal SDS. Every time our units in the provinces, we harvest information. One of the critical parts of SDS, Chairperson, which has been neglected over the time, is the public participation part. Because if you take a decision ultimately about which kind of development you want in which part of your municipality, without having consulted people in that municipality, in fact, some of the consultants that when we started funding this SDF were done in 3 months. You have consultants who sit in the Water Club in Pretoria. They want to do SDF for Fetakoma Municipality in Limpopo. They are doing SDF for Musa Eel in Eastern Cape. They sit in Pretoria to draw the maps, to get the GIS information. It's very nicely drawn. Why are you not visiting those people who are supposed to adopt this? Chairperson, we can give you assurances that in the past 2 years, in fact, we can show you maps of SDFs that we've done, and the length of time that we spent on the public participation, including the public participation reports that accompany those SDFs. And the councils adopt. We can show you the phases, and to show you the phases for doing it. Many of these consultants are not happy because they were used to doing it in 2 months and nice drawings and getting their money. But now we have a 10-month project. We do SDFs in 10 months. We not only get council approval. Councils get involved at the beginning. So we're saying that that's just one key aspect. Same thing goes for land use schemes. We're not interested in paper documents anymore. And resources, I think that the DG has also concerned. We've been building resources as a department. In the past 4 years, we've doubled our number in respect of this mandate as a department. But in terms of monitoring, we are piloting a special information system in Free State and Northern Cape, which we call a special planning information system. We want to offer municipalities GIS, but we ourselves want to create a technical platform where all the information from different sectors, because we're interested in planning how land is used. So we need as much information as possible on land use. So we have a technical system that we deploy now, we're going to deploy to municipalities, and we're going to roll it out nationally so that every decision is not based on a very isolated single purpose to say, I want to build here, without you saying to yourself that if you want to build 5,000 units here, what is related to water use, what is related to agriculture, transport, and a range of uses. And those are the kind of technical work we do as part of our monitoring. And that also, when we do the SDFs, we put it together, so we're able to see what they are doing, and that's the monitoring that we're talking about. We have a land use monitoring system that we're still developing. We have a SDF technical platform that we have also built. These are technical systems that are assisting us. The e-audit we rolled out, I think about a year ago, we have access to all the municipalities and their information. How many planners you have? We can give you a report on even the human resources in all the municipalities for this function as a country now. We've harvested that. We know their names. We know who is moving from where. The profession of town planners and the responsibility to manage town planning profession sits with this department, the planning professionals. So we know those who are registered. We know those who are not registered. And we're increasing our capacity to ensure that we share those services. In KZN, for instance, they have they've perfected this thing of calling a shared service center, and that's what we're putting in this bill. To say, you have 10 resources in this old district. They don't need to be located in one town. How do you share them so that we don't have this capacity problem? Because we can't have enough. The problem with planners is that even ourselves as a national department, we advertise to appoint people in housing. We advertise to appoint in Northwest. People don't want to go to Northwest, but they want to sit in housing or Western Cape. So we have this challenge of people not wanting to work in certain parts. And these rural municipalities truly do have human resources challenges. But our guys are very mobile. We all travel like, Chairperson, capacity, I think I've addressed the question of capacity. And we can share with you in more detail the kind of projects and the programs that we have to continue to work. The CFO is also listening attentively, and I'm sure she's nodding that we're spending the money, and she will consider more funds allocation. She's so, but we're supporting municipalities in many instances, we know that they do not even have budget for some of these line items. But it's not just about money, it's also to engage the political principles. We are every day talking to Salga to ensure municipalities to take decisions better. Chairperson, you've asked for lists of those we have consulted. You've asked for the written comments. We will ask, of course, a CD. We can print, but they are huge. There are hundreds of comments. We will give them to Mr. Bauer. We have a list of those. We will analyze some of these comments. We can show you how we've treated some of these comments, but that's something we've shared with other people. We will certainly share the comments, the list, who said what they said, how we treated it. Western Cape provincial legislation. Mr. Anton Bredell, the new HOD, Chris Rabi, we've had a series of meetings with Western Cape to reach that, and we've made quite some progress from where we were years back. In terms of people saying, this is what we're doing in every province. And we can give you those dates we've met. I mean, I've personally met with the HOD and the MEC on this matter several times in the past 3 months. We've attempted to ensure that we synchronize and meet ourselves. And I think the areas of differences are narrower than they were before in this version. And we've had several workshops. So with the Western Cape Provincial Bill, we can give you reports with their consultants, Professor Yab Defisa. We've met with them several times. Issue of traditional leadership, land in rural areas and agricultural land. I think DG has covered that point. There is no area of exclusion here. In fact, when we do our SDS, despite the fact that we have the limitation of cadastral information, of special data sets, of some of these tenure issues, I think my colleague Chief McLangu is listening to me, the tenure issues in the rural areas are still undealt with. And it's a major issue in land use management that ownership is not sorted out. But the reality, Chairperson, is that we will not leave any land unplanned, even if we have to do rudimentary land use scheme for those areas. We do not think it is healthy to leave land under traditional leadership, and we've had some very nice experience with developing SDS in areas under traditional leadership. My colleague Ross in KZN will share with you in Limpopo. We've actually had engagement, and this is so fascinating how traditional leaders interpret maps, and they actually guide us in some of the possibilities that are water usage and some of the... So it's very deep local knowledge that we're bringing into developing our planning instruments. We certainly think that whilst we keep thinking about the tenure issues, it's quite critical that we do not omit that very important repository of valuable sources. So we're not paying lip service to the involvement of the institution of traditional leadership. We're actually acutely aware that the success or failure of any endeavor in those areas depends on the active space that you afford us to work within that traditional space. So we can assure you that it's not... something we're just thinking about. It's something we're doing already. We hope to do it in greater numbers. Water. I think there was a question about water usage in those areas, how the villas dealt with it. The nature of what we do in special plan or special development is to ensure that we integrate all these different sectors. If you look at the IDP process, if you look at the SDF process, and we can share with you a list of attributes that we take into consideration. I think it's a platform that we continue to improve on. But in those areas, I mean, when you look at development in your catchment, water catchment areas, and the kind of opportunities for doing better inclusion and water usage, I think those are the things that we hope the municipalities will put within their plans. But the bill, if you look at the sections that deal with municipal SDF, those factors certainly must be considered. Relationship between this bill and existing provincial ordinances. Chairperson, we cannot at national level, or the national parliament cannot repeal provincial ordinances. We wish we could. Indeed, the law reform in this regard will be incomplete in the absence of repealing those provincial pieces of legislation. And that is the more reason why we need provincial legislation. To the extent that as national government, we are unable to repeal provincial legislation, and to the extent that we know that the non-repeal of the provincial legislation will still make this work incomplete, we are working with the provinces, indeed as the national department, We are funding the development of draft legislation at provincial level on this subject in 5 provinces. We are working very closely with those provinces to develop their own legislation. We are paying for the consultants doing the draft, and we are going to be sure that in the next few months, many of these provinces will be ready to do that. Western Cape already, they have a bill that talks about the repeal. KZN has almost repealed all the whole legislation. So in those areas that the work remains, it's a question of months, not even a year before we get to the repeal of provincial ordinances. But we will not do it ourselves, but it will be done by the provinces. The DFA was interim because in 1994, I think the government was acutely aware that the challenges and the legacy of segregation, administration, the privileging that the planning laws gave were such that you could not just wipe it clean in one single soap. So DFA dealt with just the parts that talk about restructuring of how do you make decision-making process faster. So DFA only set up tribunals to consider decisions. It had extraordinary powers to suspend some laws. But the question of how do we reorganize our space, land development objectives, to an extent, tried to deal with it, but it was not sufficient. So they thought they should do proper research. Hence, the DFA was enacted in 95. The first major piece of work that it produced, the Green Paper, very extensive study, came in 1999. The first draft was in 1998. So it was an interim because they thought, let's do a proper study, let's come up with a piece of legislation that will deal with all these problems, not just a quick response that DFA was. And this is that response to the recognition of the interim nature of that. Municipalities and privately owned land. Our view is that municipalities must do a DEF which cover every inch of land in that municipality, whether private or public. A private person owns a piece of land. It does not necessarily determine the usage. It is the power of the municipality to determine the usage in relation to other possible land uses. So the question of whether or not a municipality would be interested in using a particular piece of private land for a public purpose, I think that's dealt with in terms of expropriation. And what we have stated in SDF, and to complement what the DG has said, is that when you do your special development framework, because you want to plan for every inch of land, you will do what we call a strategic land analysis, which will say to you that even though this land is owned by A, it may be better used for this. You can try to purchase it. You can try to encourage PPP for that private person to develop it for a public purpose. And there are many options, but we do that strategic analysis of vacant land included to determine possible uses, including privately owned land. I think Chairperson have addressed the question of capacity at local, because I think it came almost in many of these comments that honorable members raised. Conflict between SDS. The example, maybe one should give a different example outside of a land use system. We have a Minister of Education at national level, we have a provincial MEC responsible for education, we have a MMC responsible for those kind of subjects. Depending on the subject matter, I think the nature of the constitutional allocation of powers in this country is one that necessarily, in line with Section 41 of the Constitution, tells that we must work together. So these four SDFs at national level, at provincial, a provincial SDF gives effect to a provincial growth and development strategy. A national special development framework will give effect to national policies. We recognize that there are possibilities of inconsistencies between them, but the kind of intergovernmental relations that we follow, the public participation process, if you look at the bill, in developing a national special development framework, we are saying that the minister must actually consult with other organs of state. Provinces will certainly make their input, municipalities will make their input. But the primary one that is very important for land use management immediately is the municipal one. We do not want to treat it as inconsistencies as such, but we think they will robustly engage with each other so that we do not see that stark reality. What we do not want to have is a situation where a municipality sits here and the boundary is at the edge of that table, but the municipality says, I will build a road up to this point, and then under municipalities, I will start mine there, and they don't talk to each other. So you need alignment of SDS, and I think they are sufficient. We've even said here that the Premier will put in place measures to ensure if there are those inconsistencies at a municipal scale. At national level also, the Minister will continue to prescribe the parameters within which we engage to ensure that these instruments do align to each other. I think that would also deal with the question of conflict. The model that we have is one that says that we must work cooperatively together. We will continue to work with municipalities in extraordinarily cooperative ways, and I know many times they seek to ask for more, but I think over the years we'll mature into a more coherent system where we all know the boundaries between each other's power. The Minister of Rural Development will be the custodian of this piece of legislation for now. Of course, the President may decide to reassign it, but the power of land use remains with the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. We are conscious of the fact that other ministers have interest in this matter. Minister of Human Settlement, Respect of Urban Development, is very interested. Minister of Agriculture, very key stakeholder. Minister of Transport. What we are saying is that the power of the minister, for instance, to do national special development frameworks in terms of this legislation will be exercised only if Cabinet approves the national special development framework. If you talk about the power of the minister to do norms and standards, minister may, at the request of another minister, do norms and standards to deal with those issues. So even though the minister is officially charged with administering this piece of legislation, the processes we've put together is one which necessarily invites the minister to do it in collaboration with his colleagues. And we have a cluster system in government. For us to get to this point, even as a bill, we've had to interact with so many departments, we've had to interact with different spheres of government. So, Chairperson, we can be sure that even though a minister is appointed by the president to manage this piece of legislation, it is done cooperatively with other spheres. Provincial differences. I think chapter 3 of the bill that we have, we have stated that in certain instances, provinces should define matters of specific provincial interest. Provinces should define matters of remedial nature where a municipality fails to perform. We have said provinces should enact pieces of legislation that deals with their provincial matters. And you will see that in this bill, we've particularly dealt with only national and largely municipalities. We have not even attempted to regulate provinces beyond talking about provincial estates. So we recognize that KZN may want to approach certain matters differently from Western Cape, but we say still we have a national framework which gives certain core minimum, and that minimum is what to regulate this bill. We have about 40 pages of a piece of bill here. The law in KZN, the plan and development ordinance in KZN, is about 120 pages, even after being printed like this. If we really want to do a national comprehensive legislation, we could go about four times this size because of the subject. And I think in KZN, in accounting also, you will see that their bill is quite big. We've deliberately, Chairperson, attempted to keep ourselves to just framework issues. Some people think we have reduced it to a minimum, in order to allow provinces to still express themselves in manners which brings out their provincial differences. Land audits, I think DJ has addressed that. We've addressed traditional leadership. The state advisors are here with us on the question of constitutionality and the relations between the three spheres. We've attempted to balance the powers as we understand the constitution. We think the state advisors are family with us on that. We've sought opinions beyond the state at different times. I mean, just yesterday we got another set of opinions from different people, but I think the issue is not more about constitutionality. I think we've gone past. There are few, in our engagement with the provinces, with the municipalities, I think we're relatively comfortable that we haven't trampled on each other's powers as given by the Constitution. And I thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. That's a little question
that I want to ask for my interest. What is the legal status of the SDS? Yeah. What is the legal status? Well, it's basically a policy document of a municipality or another sphere of government.
Mm.
Yeah, it informs the land use scheme, but it's more of a policy document.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we just need to go to another
program. But before that, I think if you have talked about it, that we are going to do the disc. We are going to be, I think those discs must print the disc for the, according to the members of, from the total numbers of members of committee. All of them must have it. And also we wanted to have those responses also in writing. The responses that you have must also must give us to us in writing. And for our mandate as a committee, we supposed to go down to the provinces to brief the provinces. This is the Section 76 bill. So I've got only the Eastern Cape that has indicated about the date that is going to be briefed on Thursday. We don't have any date for the other provinces. But we need by next week to all the provinces must be briefed. So I'm just talking to the delegates from the provinces that they must be, make sure that all the provinces must be briefed by the next by next week. Because there are public hearings that we need to, they need to do it. So I'm just said to the provinces, they must please talk to them to say that we need to have those briefings next week. So the Eastern Cape is going to be briefed this week on Thursday, and we ask the department to assist the, all the members that are going down to the provinces this, because of this bill is need for them to answer the question that is going to be raised there in the provinces. So the department must assist the provinces to go down. I think that is all for now for the for the for the bill. Thank you very much. Okay. Yes, Georgie.
Person, we have not covered the issue of the time frame. You see, Chairperson, yes, we are going to have these things in the province, but we still have got to have this public participation, public hearing. We have got only 2 weeks to do this. Just to advertise, it takes about seven days to be precise.
I think that
by the time we cannot have a negotiating mandate by
yeah.
June.
No, we understand that. That's why you said that we are just waiting for the Constitutional Court to give us the extension of the. But by the meantime, our processes must go on. Otherwise, the Constitutional Court, they were waiting for the extension. They said so that they were going to wait for the extension for, because we need that it's a very short space of time. We need to have those briefings and so on. But by the time that we brief the provinces, the department will inform us about all the development that is going to come.
TVG? Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just needed to get an indication as to how many discs you will require that must produce.
How many members?
Yes. Thank you. I want to say that I'm going to be a little bit more than a little bit of 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 a